From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour as we move into the beautiful month of May. I think it's Mary's month. Every month is Mary's month, it seems. But I love May, where winter is, although we did get rain in May, and it was cold and it snowed a couple of feet in the Sierra Nevada and within the Diocese of Sacramento, and people are skiing, but then it turns warm. I just love the month of May, how all the changes, everything's finally in bloom. And indeed, this is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. And we're glad to welcome in Jane Lee, God's Heart and Hands Ministry. I see you brought a coffee mug that says Joy to the World. Is that the Creedence Clearwater song? Or did we have Joy to the World before Creedence Clearwater had it? I'm dating myself here.
You're dating me, too.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think they were the ones that were stuck in Lodi.
I think so. Thank you. It's good to be here. But you're right about May. It is a spectacular month, isn't it?
It really is.
Because the cold is in the past. We get a little bit of warm. And it's just, God is everywhere.
Well, and, you know, in the valley, and if you head toward Vacaville and Fairfield, everything's in the Diocese of Sacramento, it seems. They have those little rolling foothills, and uh-huh. they turn this spectacular green, just by themselves. And it looks like a golf course. It looks manicured.
Yes.
And yet it's not. It's just nature going crazy.
Yes.
And it's
and that green, that shade of green, that spring green.
Oh, it's spectacular.
It's a different type of green.
Yeah.
Because it changes as it's out in the sun more. And then how everything is blooming right now.
Yeah.
It's kind of distracting to drive, honestly, because everywhere is just beautiful. Yes. Yeah. And God is really showing us. We've come out of the cold, the dark, the difficult, and spring. And what's fascinating is all of that was brewing. When it looked like the earth was silent or asleep, and nothing was going on, and everything's barren and very little color, white, right? White and gray and brown of the trees not having any green or any color on them. That was growing underneath. It was nurturing because then the buds burst.
Yep.
And so when we look, and that's what May is, that transition. And you can't help but just look and see God showing us he's there and he was doing work when we didn't see it. And yes, although May, we had, 90 degrees?
Already.
And we already had freezing, close to freezing, like a week ago.
Yeah.
That cold.
And a lot of rain.
Yes, which we need the rain, but still.
They always say that, but I think there's some people on the Central Coast that say, hey, we don't need any more, any more rain.
Yes,
but,
that's true.
Actually, our water situation has gotten a lot better in the last 2 years because of
thank you, Lord.
The Pineapple Express or whatever they want to call it, you know, the atmospheric rivers. When I was a kid, they just said it's raining. Now they say it's an atmospheric river.
They have different words for it, don't they?
It always comes from somewhere other than here. We rarely get rain that originates here like a thunderstorm. It's always coming either from Hawaii or from Alaska, our storms. They just do, you know. But anyway, the Weather Bureau loves to do things like that.
That's true.
They need new names for those things to make it exciting.
That's true. We like change, don't we?
Yeah.
We do. And so this, with God's Heart and Hands Ministry, is seeing that parents are God's heart and hands, and that God is doing work, is working to shape our children through us. And so much of parenting is under the radar. We don't see it until it blossoms, right? Until it changes. And right now, especially parents, there's a lot of worries in the world, and families are getting pushed from all sides, from the difficulties of one thing or another. But always God, I don't want to even make it sound trite, because it's simple, but it's not easy. God is always there. But the storm gets around us. You know, we've seen some big storms lately this winter, you know, some storms that were concerning, where you couldn't see through the windshield.
Right.
But we as parents have to draw our families back to God, and that's where our only refuge and our safety is. And so with that, that's where we find out how rich our faith is. You know, so if we've been away from it, or we've forgotten, or we've gotten distracted, and so on, which can happen very easily, it's drawing us back to the faith and putting God back in the center. Things change, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
It just shifts everything somehow.
Indeed.
So parents have a role in society that it's been diluted and distracted. And I know when I was working as an engineer, watching the moms and the pressure that they were put under to, you know, the family work balance. And parents have always worked, wouldn't you say, going back generations?
Parents always worked. My mom worked full time from the time I was born. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize she was working.
That was a sacrifice. Your mom was an amazing woman to sacrifice that much.
I've told the story before, but she was an RN, and we moved to California shortly after World War II ended. My dad had been in World War II and never wanted to talk about it. He was in the Army and had seen a lot of his own men die and had seen a lot of the quote-unquote enemy die. But he was married to the daughter of German immigrants. It's probably an inescapable conclusion when I really think about it, mm-hmm. that some relatives of my mom, which would be relatives of mine,
right,
fought on the other side in that war. Her parents were first. I mean, they moved here from Germany and to North Dakota, and left whoever their brothers and sisters and everybody else back in the old country.
Wow.
And then you have World War One, and then you have they moved here probably in the early 1900s. And World War II, and certainly you've got many family members who are still in Germany, and thing you know, we're at war with them, you know, mm-hmm. and so, and my dad really, right? I remember about the only thing he would say about the war, because he was in that combat, like you know, here's your foxhole and there's their foxhole, you know, and would say, I knew that German soldier didn't want to be there any more than I wanted to be where I was. He didn't think of them as, because you demonize the enemy is one of the things you demonize them and especially if the enemy is a different race, then it becomes very demonized, you know. Right. And it wasn't the case with Germans, but he said he didn't want to be there any more than I did. But anyway, we moved to California so he could finish college at age 40, and five little kids, and my mom, we were in Davis. My mom got a job in Woodland working at the Memorial Hospital or something mm-hmm. there in Woodland. There were no hospitals in Davis. It was a town of 3,000 people. It was very small, and she would ride the train from Davis to Woodland at midnight and work midnight to 7, something like a 7:30. And when we would get up to go to school, we're probably leaving for school at 8:30, something like that. So we were probably getting up at 8:29. And she was, because I was 5 years old. It was actually my fifth birthday when we moved to Davis. And I'd get up in the morning, and there was Mom making breakfast. And I'd come home from school at like 3 or 3:30 or whatever. And there was Mom, and we'd have dinner with Mom, and then at some point she'd tuck us in, or Dad, and you know, uh-huh. I mean, we were like family, and I'd go to bed, and then Mom would go to work.
Wow.
And I really, when I was 5 years old, I didn't, I mean, I probably knew she was a nurse, but uh-huh. didn't know anything more, because she was always present. So I think for the first 18 years of my life, she never slept. That's my guess. She never slept.
The sacrifice.
Never slept once.
That's a sacrifice we make.
Maybe on the train, the 15-minute train ride.
Probably so. 15 minutes after you went to school,
yeah.
Then she was asleep. And moms, we do. God gives us the gift to be able to sleep standing up. We look like we're doing dishes, but our hands hit soapy warm water.
I don't have that gift.
That's why I said moms.
Yeah, I have to be. Prone. I have.
Oh no, I can sleep because of motherhood. I had a child that was very excited to be alive, and so sleeping was not a pastime to him. I could sleep standing up.
I've taken the red eye a few times, like to New York when I had to be back there, and everybody on the plane is asleep, and they've turned out all the lights, and you know, and the flight attendants are walking very quietly right. down the aisle, and I'm just wide awake.
Oh boy!
Because I'm sitting up, you know.
Right, right. So that you know what you, the stories you tell about your mom, which are just beautiful. That sacrifice and how it was all below the radar. You didn't know.
No.
So you maintain. She.
Well, that's true sacrifice. When
yes.
Somebody you know, like, don't be a martyr. She wasn't a martyr. You know, I mean, actually, martyrdom is revered in the Catholic Church, but
right.
that's an expression.
Right.
You know, like, oh, poor me.
No, not at all.
There was never a poor me.
No, it wasn't.
She spread, and we've just come off of Mother's Day, so we can talk about mothers.
Uh-huh.
She spread joy in our family, and she spread hope and optimism in our family based on our faith. You know, like, you might have just gotten a bad grade in school. You maybe later on, you know, you had a breakup or you didn't make the team, that kind of stuff. She put it all in context, and she was a convert. And boy,
she put it in the context of your faith.
Of your faith, of, you know, God's got a plan, you know, and we used to talk, and I talk with my kids about it now. Something happens, a disappointment maybe, or something good happens, you know, and even taking a different road to somewhere, like you miss your turn.
Right, yes.
And oh, man, I missed my turn, and we're going to be 10 minutes late. And I'll always say, we just reshuffled the deck. We are now going to have a different experience today than we would have if we hadn't missed our turn. You know, if
True.
when you didn't get that job or whatever, you didn't make the team, you're going to have a different experience than had you. Maybe a radically different experience, you know, and you've just reshuffled the deck. But God's the dealer.
Right.
God's
right.
got all those cards in his hands.
And we do think we're the ones reshuffling the deck.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the
startling. It's almost like
thing.
The deck got involuntarily shuffled. We didn't do it on purpose.
Right.
It just happened.
Mm-hmm. Right. And what your mom was doing was putting everything that your lives in the context of your faith and thereby in the context of God.
Yeah.
And by the faith speaks to God's constant presence and his intervening. And to reshuffle the deck, to have us miss the turn and so on. And coupled with not knowing that your mom went to work every night, because your life as a child had its routine where you didn't miss your mom being there. Your mom and your dad had worked it out and made all the pieces fit.
Exactly.
And that's where parents are God's heart and hands, that we all, that is the most critical thing we do. Everything else supports it. Everything else is a piece of it, but nothing matters more to humanity and to life and to every single piece that moves forward. And it's not trite, but we're minimizing it. We're clouding it. We're shifting it to say, no, parenthood serves something else, so do it this way. No, everything else in the world I would offer, society that we're talking about, actually serves parenthood. And we've shifted the paradigm. And the struggle is now is that it's coming, it's gone too far. To now families are starting to pull at families. And we've gotten involved in parenting and telling parents how they should do things and what they should say, the language they should use, and when their kids should have or do or be, whichever, you know, go to this or be in this. When used to the information was out there, and then parents made the decision based on their family choices. And like when I was raising my kid, there was a family in our community. All three kids played competitive sports, the higher level traveling sports. But it worked for their family
right.
because of the situation of the temperaments and everything else. It did not work for other families, or they just played rec league, and that worked perfect for them. And so, but there was this shift and this pressure of, oh, you're not doing this. Like the kids right now in the high schools with AP classes. Kids will actually scorn another kid. Oh, you're not taking four AP classes like I am? But it's not meant for that kid, too, because right. of what's offering, where they're at, and what's going on everywhere else. And talking about the deck that God created for their lives, God doesn't want them doing that. He's got a different piece in mind. And so then when a kid doesn't get a class or the school doesn't offer it, then God has a longer-term plan. And what your mom did was beautiful, taking her role as the mother of her piece of putting it in the context of faith, I would offer there's really nothing more important than we can do as parents.
Yeah, I mean, she, like I say, she was a convert. She grew up in North Dakota on a farm. Her dad died when she was 7 years old.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And she was one of seven, and her mom eventually met a widower who had five, and they got married, and together they had five more. So there were 17 kids.
Whoa!
Probably age, well, when the fifth of those was born. So those would be, I don't like the word half, like it's your half brother or it's your step brother or whatever. They were all one family.
Right.
But probably the youngest was just born.
Mm-hmm.
And probably the oldest was maybe going off to college or something, you know, mm-hmm. or going out into the workforce. And my mom went to St. Alexis Nursing School in Bismarck, North Dakota, which was a Catholic nursing school, even though I think the law in North Dakota is you have to be Lutheran. And and she said, and this is long before she met my dad, who was a tremendously devout Catholic, and she said those nuns, she said the nuns did not try to convert me anything. They just went about, but they were teaching at the nursing school, and she said they had something, they had a joy, they had a way about them. She said I wanted what they had, and she converted to Catholicism before she met my dad. And my dad was in Portland, and my dad had just been, he'd been ROTC in college at Oregon State. He had served whatever, I think 5 years of the commitment, even mm-hmm. though he hadn't quite graduated. He had served his 5-year commitment in the Army, and he's on what he, they had just gotten married, and they were honeymooning in Mexico, and they were at a bullfight, and back in the days when that uh-huh. was popular, and he's on what they call terminal leave, which means you're using your accumulated leave time, mm-hmm. and at the end of it, you're out. So he had served 5 years, and they announced at the bullfight, it happened to be December 7, 1941, that Pearl Harbor had been bombed, and he looked at my mom and said, "I'm going back in." So he ended up serving nine years.
Wow.
And you know, we think of hardships today.
Right.
He got on a ship. First, he did a lot of training of people stateside for the war before he got sent to the war. And so by the time he got sent, he's getting on a ship on Christmas Eve. My mom has a one-year-old and is 5 months pregnant with another. And her husband is getting on a ship on Christmas Eve in a day of virtually no communication.
Right.
None. I mean, you could write him a letter and he could be dead before he even gets the letter. Or he could write you a letter.
Right.
And you would get that letter and you're reading it and, oh, good, things are good. And here comes the people walking down the step and knocking on your door with uniforms on saying,
right.
You know, and the rest is history, you know, but I remember we didn't have a Catholic school in Davis, so we went and there wasn't CCD or after school, all that stuff. It was called catechism class, Saturday morning, 9 a.m. It would be mass, a short mass, because it was all the kids probably from kindergarten through eighth grade. Mm-hmm. And then there would be instruction, and it'd last from 9 to 11, confession. And if you're old enough, but I can remember on Saturday mornings being in bed, and we had to be there by 9. We'd ride our bikes down there. You know, it was about a mile from our house. And I'm in bed, and Mom's still asleep because she's, she know. And I'm right. like, dear Lord, please let my mom sleep. please let my mom sleep. She really needs some sleep. And I'm like, because what I really, I really didn't want her to wake up because, oh, it's 10:30. I guess you're going to miss catechism this morning.
Oh, wow, rats.
I wonder who I was praying to.
Oh, my gosh.
But she always managed to wake up and get us. And when you have a convert in the family, I mean, somebody who willingly, as a young adult, picked our faith. I was baptized the day I was born.
Wow.
I did consent. Full consent of the will. But there was something that they were worried about in the blood. It was called the Rh factor.
Mm-hmm.
I think they had sort of newly discovered that it could be difficult for an infant if the Rh of the baby was different than the Rh of the mom or something like that.
Right.
There was Rh positive and Rh negative. I remember that. And the antibodies could, this is the way it explained to me. Some doctor could be listening now and going, this is so wrong. But the antibodies could build up in the mom in future pregnancy, And I was the fourth kid born in 3 years. And this sort of concern had just been discovered. And so there was concern as the pregnancy progressed that this might not be a good outcome.
Right.
And it was at Emmanuel Hospital in Portland, which until a couple of years ago, I always assumed it was a Catholic hospital. Emmanuel Hospital.
Yeah, right. Sounds like it. Right.
It was a Lutheran hospital,
oh.
I found out. But there was a Catholic chaplain in the hospital. And when it came time, my dad grabbed this chaplain, took him into the delivery room and said, we need to baptize this boy in case he doesn't make it.
Wow.
But I was completely healthy. I think it was either or. I don't think it was you were going to be sick or it was an either or kind of deal. And I guess I got the or. So, and so I was probably 5 minutes after birth. It may be in the Guinness Book of World Records. I'm not sure.
It might be. But that speaks to how deep the faith was for your parents, how they
absolutely
lived it.
I mean, no, that was, I mean, Dad obviously wanted the best outcome, but that was foremost in his mind. This baby has to be baptized today.
Mm-hmm. And so that, and I'm it really strikes me, the stories you're telling about your mom and your dad, their faith was integral to who they were. It wasn't
absolutely
something external that was just Sunday or you guys doing catechism. It was integral. And I would offer that that's actually the only solution right now for families, for parents, because we are the leaders of the family. We have to. I mean, they don't get an opinion. You know, they're when kids are teenagers, we can hear them, but they don't make the decisions. And we're bleeding the line on independence and so on and so forth But parents being the leaders of the family in order to bring the family back to its strength and protection. And isolation, I would say, in a firm walls between raising the children and society, God is the only way. And it's got to be integral to the parents. It's not something external. We're not going to be able to combat all of what's out there, except when you're focused on God and you get right with God, then all the decisions become clear.
Right.
Then all the choices, and you have the strength, and then there's no fumbling through it. And this is just what it is right now.
Right.
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 And so that said, taking it down to from the chaos, from the disorientation, from the disorganization, if you will, to back to an ordered, peaceful life and how you're describing things. And they all yearn for that. And it's been bit by bit by bit that we don't realize how far off the mark we've gotten until our house is not peaceful. We're not handling things well. There's a lot of tension. How do we do it? I would offer, it kind of goes back to the simple thing of family prayer, of rosary, tonight, today, starting with the family dinner, just sitting around. And it's not elaborate. It doesn't have to be anything big, whatever it is. But it's, let's start off with grace. And let's talk about what we're grateful for. And let's talk about our crosses. And then the rosary is so powerful. It's like this unknown. How would you say it? How would you describe it? I mean, for someone on the outside, you can't. It's hard to convince them of how effective it is, and how you're opening the door to grace that in a way that we don't even know. But when you say it and when you do it, the shift is amazing. And but if you can just have the confidence, just sit down with your kids and start the rosary and look it up on your phone, because you probably need it. I remember when I didn't know how to say the rosary. And it is formulaic. It can be done. If you can read, or actually, no, there's audio. But the point is, and how to get your kids engaged with it. What's on their heart? What's on their mind? What are they grateful for? That's gone well today, this week? What's not? What cross are they bearing? Because children bear crosses too, difficult. Yep. And I like how your mom brought the context to God has another plan. So in this chaos, and we know there's scripture over and over again where the Lord, in Psalm 145, 18, the Lord is near to all who call upon him, to all who call upon him in truth. He's there. He's waiting for us to do our part. I think he's just standing right behind us all the time.
Yep.
Just waiting for us to turn around.
I remember when we were learning the rosary, and the hardest one was the Apostles' Creed. And with the First Holy Communion, which the training for that was separate from the catechism. I think it was like Tuesday or something after school. And this all would take place in the church. There was no hall. There was no, you know, it was just the church. The old church, which became the Newman Center, and, you know, and it's that brick building with the bell, a real bell, you know, right across from Central Park in the middle of town. And so I was either 6 or 7. I'm trying to think. Holy Communion is usually in May, I think.
Typically, yes.
Yeah, and right. So I probably had turned 7 in September. I was in second grade, and there were only a handful of Catholics in town then, but, you know, it was me and Betty O'Brien and Peter Schultz and a few people like that, you know, and so we're down there. And the priest that was instructing us, he was, we had a pastor, Father Dignan, but I think this priest, he was very young and he was helping for a while. It was too small of a parish to have more than one priest, but Paul Dignan from the old country, Ireland. That's all the term Irish priest was redundant when I was growing up. I mean, they were all Irish priests. And you still see them, you know, in Father Murphy and Monsignor Murphy and Father Michael Kiernan and Father Dan Looney, my experience, Father Monsignor Coffey was our pastor for 30 some years, Kavanaugh, all these great names, O'Connor, and on and on and on. But anyway, so he told us, next week I want you to learn the Apostles' Creed. Because that's right there in the rosary, you know, and that was all, it was pretty easy to memorize the Our Father and the Hail Mary. I mean, they still just roll off the tongue.
Right.
And the Glory Be, but the Apostles' Creed, that was a tougher one.
It is a big one.
It's like kind of like remembering all the words to the national anthem. You get to somewhere and you go, wait a minute, I just said that, you know.
Uh-huh.
And so I spent, and who the first person that does it gets $1. Which I think in today's money, that's about $100,000.
Oh, my God.
You know?
What was minimum wage then? Do you remember?
Oh, there was no such thing as a minimum wage.
Oh, we have just dated ourselves.
Oh, yeah. I can't imagine. But $1 was $1.
Yes, that was.
And,
wow.
And, well, I remember a hamburger at Foster Freeze downtown was 19 cents.
So that's like five hamburgers.
Yeah, that was their normal price.
So that's five hamburgers. It is a big deal.
And there was a Coke machine at the Shell station in town, and it was nickel. You know, and it had a little cup would drop down, and the Coke would go in the thing.
That dollar was a lot of money.
Oh, yeah, it was a huge amount of money.
That's like feeding a family.
A loaf of bread was probably 19 cents, 25 cents. A gallon of gas was 19 cents. I mean, it was a home. A home was $9,900. You know, I mean, it's just It's way different, especially
now it's got a couple more zeros.
Especially in California, a couple more zeros.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Well.
9,900. Yeah.
A couple of zeros. Annie, you're a math person.
Yeah. And, sometimes.
And that one zero adds a lot.
It does. It completely changes.
Yeah.
It.
Two zeros is 100 times. So anyway.
And that's what we're living in now.
So.
Yeah.
So, I get to where I think I've got this Apostles' Creed down. You know, I was practicing every night, but you had to memorize it. You couldn't read it. And so we all come in on Tuesday after school, and I'm waiting for it. And this one kid comes in about 2 minutes late, and he says, "Father, I memorized the Apostles' Creed, but I can't stay today. I have to go get a haircut, and I need the dollar." And he gave him the dollar.
Oh.
And I wasn't mad as much as crestfallen. Like,
yeah.
Oh, like,
right.
That's no fair.
Yeah, like, I hear you.
There's only $1.
Did he have to say it?
No, because he was in a hurry. He came in. Like, didn't even sit down. "Father, I memorized the creed, but I need the dollar. I have to go get a haircut, and then we're going, I don't know, they were going to go visit grandma or something." You know, he couldn't stay. Gets the dollar and goes out the door.
Whoa.
And I'm like,
oh, my gosh.
The injustice.
Yes. Oh, my gosh.
But, I mean, it's. I don't have a lot of stories from childhood. That's one I remember. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's like it just happened yesterday.
Wow.
You know, and it's not that I'm holding on to it. You know, it's not that. It's just like it told me, don't ever do that to somebody else. Mm-hmm. Don't kind of butt in line.
Right.
You know.
Right.
Don't,
There's a lot there.
It's almost a biblical story. You know, the
parables.
A parable. You know, like. There's a lot of layers to almost all the parables.
And what's so important is I bet when you took it home and you told your mom, she put it in the context of faith again, right? Because that's one of the most important things that we do as parents that has definitely been shifted right now is that time for the kids to come home and tell the stories and the parents to look them in the eye and listen. Set the cell phones aside. There's so much busyness that's interfered that time for the child to just relive a memory of the day and for us to converse about it and understand what their experience of it was and to put it in context.
Yep.
That's one of the things that we've diluted, that we've shifted away from. And working with kids and just being around living long enough, you see the shift. Just families that are out when they all are looking at cell phones, walking even. The kids are walking with cell phones, and the parents are too, and they're all just in their own little world walking. And there used to be so much interaction.
Yep.
The kids would see things and talk, and they learn the stories of the world. And the few times I've been blessed, because it's a very tenuous conversation with young parents to talk about the cell phone, I said, I just know how much my kids talked about what they saw just looking out the window or walking along, you know, wherever we were. And that doesn't happen now.
Yeah, well, you know, I've noticed that, like you too. I see people walking in the neighborhood and pushing the stroller with one hand and the phone up to the ear. The times I don't see that, it's when grandma's pushing the infant.
Mm.
Look, it's a tree.
Uh-huh.
Look, it's a bird. Look, it's a dandelion. And picking the dandelion and handing it to the kid. You know, those are all magic moments for an infant. Truly an infant. You know, an infant is registering all that stuff.
And we now know that an infant's brain is double the metabolism of an adult. That's why two-year-olds only eat till they're full and they're going to get down. It's just fuel.
I still remember when Shelley and I, when our first baby was born, Maeve, it was a cesarean. She was breached, and it was very, very scary. Mm. And she'd been in labor for 18 months, and nobody realized that Maeve was breached. Anyway, so they prep her and everything. They actually let the dad in the delivery room, but you're kind of not quite behind a curtain, but almost, where you can see a bit. And because, I mean, it's major surgery.
Right.
And there's and it was an emergency surgery. I mean, it was a Saturday in a small hospital, and they're on the, you know, anybody who ever went to medical school, please get to the emergency room kind of thing.
Wow.
You know.
Right.
And it was a Saturday afternoon in July. And Maeve is now 22. She's a senior in college at UC Davis. And a nurse came out as I'm waiting out there, because I'm thinking they forgot me. I'm sitting out here. It's all about me. And
well, you want to be there. It's the birth of a child.
And but now it was an emergency. And because I remember driving to the hospital so excited, her water broke, and we're, and it hit me halfway to the hospital that all this joy, all this anticipation, like you're going to the Super Bowl or something, and sometimes this doesn't turn out so well. Ooh. I don't know where the thought came from. And then we get there, and this is what happened. And this nurse came out of the emergency room and said, "Trust the Lord. It's going to be okay."
Wow.
And I never saw her again. And I tried to, because I wanted to contact her and say, "You just really," because she could tell I was panicked, you know. I think it was an angel.
It kind of sounds like it.
You know, it was just, and it was had such a calming effect. Anyway, I go in and Maeve is born, you know, they're passing the baby around and they're cleaning her up and everything. And finally, they put her on Shelly's chest just for a minute because she's just undergone major surgery. And they're going to wheel her off and they're going to hand the baby to me, you know. And they put Maeve on Shelly's chest. And Maeve's head is sideways and looking away from Shelly.
Right.
And all she could hear was all this noise in the room and all the clatter. And, I mean, there were probably, I don't know, 10 people in the room.
Right.
And then Shelly says, "Hello, little Maeve." And her head flipped.
Wow.
And just looked right at Shelly. She knew the voice.
Wow.
And the doctors noticed it. Like, and wow.
Wow.
I mean, she knows your voice. And it was the first time she had heard the voice outside the womb.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and so it's all, so every second, literally every second from conception, they're gaining knowledge. They're gaining whatever.
Right.
Every second. And because
they're sponging up what's going on.
Yeah, I've heard people say, you know, well, you know, we went on a family vacation, but they were only 2 months old. I don't remember any of that. They might not remember any of that, but they were taking it all in. Because one day, at whatever age, they say mama, they say dad, they say tree, they say bird. And they didn't just come up with that on that day. It's been,
they had to form language.
They've been forming it as you go.
Language. Right. Yes, that's true. And what we used to think, well, it's no problem to let a baby cry it out, just to cry. It's not a... They won't remember. But now we know that actually there's stress hormones in the body. To just leave them and let them, we now know that there's physiological things that are going on in that kind of distress, and they need reassurance and so on and so forth. And parenting is the biggest, hardest job on the planet. That's
well, you know,
for sure.
And, you know, there's, you know, should you let a baby sleep in the bed with you? And there's a concern about suffocation and all that kind of stuff. I was one of those nervous Nelly kind of. We didn't have her in the bed, but because there is that concern, you might. I mean, we're both adults. We might roll over and really do something terrible, you know.
Yeah.
And because we're talking about an infant, but she was in the room, definitely in the room.
Yes,
I mean,
that's
definitely
what we do
within
too,
a hand's
cradle.
Reach.
Right.
You know, I didn't like the notion of like that. People would say, "Is the nursery already?" Meaning.
Down the hall.
Down the hall. I'm like, oh, no way.
Right, Right. And so all that speaks to, there's a lot that happens when we become parents that we didn't even know we had this wiring and this impulse and so on and so forth. And it goes back to what you're saying about your mom, putting it in the context of God. God had all that. He's formed each of us, that there's parts of us that come alive when we're a parent that we didn't even know we had that ability. Yep. You know, I remember once when I was pregnant with my second child, and I had my first child in the stroller and another baby I was taking care of. And a dog came out, and we were out walking in the neighborhood, and this dog, and they were little dogs, but they were fierce, and you can tell, you know, that bark and that snarl. They came across the street towards us. I stepped towards them. The mama bear roar that came out of, I didn't even know I could do that. They turned tail and ran.
Yeah.
Because you have this, there's an instinct, there's this wiring. And so many people talk about, oh, I'm not ready. But I think that's why God gives us 9 months to get used to it. And they're born in these little compact packages that really helps. You know, they're not mobile right away. Yes, they depend on us for everything. But it's a process of becoming, and then it opens our hearts and changes us in ways we can't imagine. And so as the worries of those that are facing an unexpected pregnancy and whatever is unexpected with a family, because we know there's so many things, what your mom did always, and your dad too, by bringing it to the context of God, we are God's heart and hands. He doesn't abandon us. He is always there. I mean, it's all over Scripture. But we have to consciously remind ourselves, he sees this.
Right.
He sees what we're going through. And we get so concrete, you know, if it's not accessible or changeable in the phone or some solution, like, God love them, Amazon's become really something we do to take care of whatever's going on in the instant. So we've kind of, our ability to withstand discomfort or just waiting and see what God's plan is. Yeah, there's benefits to be able to get that delivery that fast. But then there's also, depending on God, like the nurse said to you, wait it out. Just ride it out. The Lord is with you, you know. And we have Scripture that he says that the Lord, the same psalm I said earlier, 145:18, a psalm, the Lord is near to all who call upon him. So by calling upon him, we're bringing in the big guns. We're bringing in that help.
Yep.
It may take a while before it plays out, but we look back. It may be a season. And so it may be all of these things, but it's, you know, Psalm 103, know that the Lord is God. Okay, stop right there. There's God. God's there. We're not alone, you know, and we have to remind ourselves, you know, and put the little post-it note up on the refrigerator, on the bathroom mirror, by the front door. But it's that what we put in front of our eyes feeds us, sustains us.
Right.
And if we've got the cell phone with the headlines, oh, baby. That's going to take us someplace different. But if we make other choices and do other things and then go on with this psalm, he made us, we belong to him, we are his people, the flock he shepherds. So when you think of a big flock, the sheep that's in the middle, all he's got is other sheep around him. He's kind of going with the flow. He can't see the shepherd. He might pull his head up a little bit, but then all he's got is another sheep in front of him, behind him, inside him. So he can't see the shepherd. But he's moving, and he's getting jostled, and he's getting bounced, and he's like, oh, what do I do? How do I get out of here? I don't know. I want to eat. I'm hungry. Where are we going? It's starting to rain. What's going to happen? It's hot out here. But the shepherd, who's many, many sheep away, guides them to what they need. He knows, right? He knows their voice. They know his voice. So he knows what we're suffering, how we're suffering. However, we have to call on him. We have to tell our kids, we're sitting down for the rosary tonight, you know? Yep. We're going to do this and make it simple. It's not huge. It has to be seamless because we can't, you know, the Titanic took a little bit to turn it, but it could be turned. And they didn't, even though they got messages.
Yep.
We can do this. And so while it may be the storms are high and sometimes there's been seasons where I just say, man, I just got a bigger surfboard. That's all I can do. I'm riding this out. And then, and the Lord always takes care of it. And there's been times in prayer that the Lord has said, this next season, just hang on. I'm like, what? Just hang on. And that's like, trust in me.
Yeah, trust in me.
Trust in me.
And if they don't listen, the sheep, to the sheep? Shepherd, he's got a dog.
True.
I remember
that's a good point.
As a kid, well, they still have it, picnic day at UC Davis. And it was really It's changed a bit, but it was really a big open house. Every department, and of course, when I was a kid, it was all ag. It was all animals and crops. I mean, that's what it was. It was the ag campus of Berkeley, basically.
Okay.
And it's the second oldest campus. You had University of California in Berkeley, and then they needed a place to raise their crops and stuff. And you couldn't raise the crops in Berkeley, so they founded this agriculture. It was called the University Farm. Its original name was University Farm. You would even see the football team. It had a big UF on their uniforms. It wasn't UC Davis. It was University Farm. And the professors would come up from Berkeley, but there was students there, and they were basically learning how to grow wheat and rice, or how to raise animals. And you know, I mean, there was all the majors were animal science, all that. And then they got a vet school and all that. But on picnic day, so it was this big open house, and you could go see the honeybees in a comb and do all this stuff. And they would have the sheepdog trials. And they would have the sheep out on this big grassy intramural field. And here would be a dog. It was like a competition between these different dogs. And one little sheep would start going a little away from the herd, boy, that dog was right there. I mean, it was fascinating.
Wow.
That the dog was controlling, I don't know, 50 sheep or something.
And I know the dog.
Some shepherds are out there laughing right now saying, no, that's not how it works. But it was in my memory, it was this dog racing.
And it's certain breeds of dogs, right?
Yeah.
So you can't take any dog and have. So it's fascinating that God has already.
Can't take the dog we have for sure.
But God designed those particular breeds to do it. And those dogs, and some dogs, like the competition, were better at it and learned it, so on and so forth. It's another window onto God's complexity and God seeing that we're going to need it and God taking care of it.
Yep.
And so by having the time with the rosary, not only starting with gratitude, but acknowledging what are our crosses right now. And I know it shifts, and for me, I've experienced it. And to hear what our priests are saying and then to try and go, wow, that really is true. When we actually say the words, thank you for the cross of, or thank you for this cross and what it is, and it's really pokey, but I'm just going to say thank you, it shifts. It the burden shifts. It's like the Lord, we acknowledge with him, and so he carries more of it. It's a fascinating part of our faith to do that. So that speaks to another place that when you look, you see God. He's got this other, but you have to stop and look. Like the competition you're talking about, people stopped and watched.
Right.
Right. So when we take our family at dinner time and whichever, it's just a natural part in our culture to have dinner at a certain time of day and getting back to family dinner, which needs to be restored and will strengthen the family. But that pause of where are we? How are we doing? And so on, giving that quietness to God, just that sitting together and just taking a breath and looking at each other. Here we are. And now let's keep going. And what's going on in our hearts? What are we doing moving forward? And then the parents, going back to your parents, God guided them. Mm-hmm. Your mom hadn't been practicing those things all day. She was just, what she was going to say, to put it in context, she lived it.
Yeah.
And then it became stronger, and the inner tapestry in her, based on God, became very rich, and your dad as well. And that's how it works. What we put our attention to is what develops. So if we put it with our faith and just acknowledge God, and all the pieces, all the thousands of ways, even just sitting at an intersection, just looking through the windshield, how many things are blooming right now? Those weren't there 2 months ago.
Yeah.
Right? And the plants weren't green and lush.
Yeah, we have, I guess it would be technically called a weed, but in our front lawn, they're just in tiny little patches. Little yellow flowers, not a dandelion, but they are maybe a tenth of an inch across.
Yes, I know what you're talking about. I've seen purple ones as well.
Yeah, and there are purple ones too. And I look at it. It's so tiny you can't pick it without damaging it. I mean, your fingers are just too big to pick it. And I've called the kids over, and they know I'm fascinated. Dad's got those yellow flowers. They are so small, and yet they are intricate. And they got there all on their own. They didn't, we didn't plant them, although they actually are very pretty to look at. I mean, they're not in a big patch. There's just a few, you know.
Right, and if you can get close enough and get a magnifying glass.
Yeah. And I think they have four,
and
not,
sometimes
not petals, four little leaves, or I guess it's called a petal. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, and you're going, holy cow, how did that happen?
Right.
You know, how did this thing get to our yard? Because I can't grow a tomato. I mean, when I intentionally plant it, and you know, you get these blossoms, and then they don't bear fruit, and you know, and you know, the neighbors are coming by with a whole oh, we had a bumper crop. Would you like some tomatoes? I just want to grow a tomato.
I know.
You know? I want to eat a tomato that I grew.
Yes.
You know.
Yes.
You can't do it.
Yes, and that's a God thing. Actually, I don't understand it either. I think even. It sounds inconsequential, but it's really, how come they can do that and I can't? I'm trying.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Does that keep us connected to God saying, you're looking to think you can do everything?
Yeah.
Arts. Oh,
well, you know, and all I got to do is drive a mile out of town, and here's a whole field of tomatoes, you know, all just thriving.
Wow.
You know?
That's part of the gift of, and when you see yourself as God's heart and hands, to also see the joy and the grace that comes into our lives as parents now, is when you listen and give the quiet to slow the family down, so then you observe the kids and they're seeing these things, and you know, this they see the small pieces in nature, they see, and you know, the question about does a tree in the forest, if no one's there, when it falls, so when the all of a sudden the trees bud out, right, all the leaves. They weren't there a couple days ago.
Yep.
Did they make noise when they come out? Because friction makes noise.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a small thing like that. But it's through the children's eyes that they bring us to see God did that. And why does some leaf early, late, over a course of weeks, course of days? But when we see ourselves, our job as parents, and it really is a job, it's got a description, it's got a goal, and it's got, how would you say it, evaluation. And we're not judged on how our kids turn out, so to speak, because some kids come in with a bigger, how would you say it, burdens, bigger crosses. Mm-hmm. Some people are born with crosses. Some are visible. Some are not. And it's what did we do along the way? Like Mother Teresa said, God doesn't call us to be successful. He doesn't call me to be successful. He calls me to be faithful.
Mm-hmm.
And so returning parents back through the, sometimes the storm is the gift. How many kids said that through COVID, wow, they liked how slowed down life got, that there's always a blossom in the fertilizer, so to speak. But then also looking, there's so many things now that of the tools we have to help a family in the small way. If you've only got 3 minutes, set the timer for 3 minutes so you're not late for where you have to go, and sit down with your kids. Pull up a Bible app. Pull up a prayer app, Relevant Radio, right? They've got the prayers. Oh my gosh, the Merry Beggars, the Relevant Radio now, it's their entertainment division. They're doing, and it's radio. So it's like something out of the 1930s or 40s where they got the radio actors. And they'll do five-part segments on different saints. They've got quite a selection. So it's teaching your children about the saints of our faith in a very simple way, but it's entertainment well, which entertainment right now is hard for parents. You can't just let the kid, like we could when we were growing up, just let them watch something entertain. You've got to be there. But the Merry Beggars and Relevant Radio, you know it's safe.
Mm-hmm.
You know you're giving them, and they're looking for role models and so on and so forth. And so seeing ourselves as God's heart and hands and understanding, if we just have that thought as parents, then everything shifts.
Yep.
I am the link between God and my children. And so 1 Thessalonians 5:18, in all circumstances give thanks, for this is the will of God for you in Christ Jesus. In all circumstances, some of those, it's kind of hard to give thanks, you know? But it really does always work out. And sometimes it's just messier and harder. And the long seasons of waiting are very much harder. But like Mother Teresa, again, the dark night of the soul that she experienced for how long? 50 years?
Yeah.
40, something like that, a very long time. And so it's we can't change society. We can't change anything about what's going on outside. But regrouping and refocusing and setting everything else aside and just sitting down today. And it's amazing. When you set that timer for that 3 minutes that I mentioned, you can actually relax. You don't have to watch the time anymore.
Yep.
And just look your kids in the eye and let them look you in the eye. That's where we get back to God.
Yeah, very well said. You know, every time you think, oh boy, the world, look at the world. Look what's going on. Look, you know, I say God made us for this time.
Mm-hmm.
Period. We're here during this time. I'm not nostalgic for another day. This is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it.
Right. And when we put God in the center, we don't worry about what's going on out there. It's like, God, what do you want me to do now?
Yep.
To love.
Yep. So there's a reason we're here during this day. People say, well, wouldn't you rather be 18? And I said, well, yeah, I'd like to be able to run a little faster and all that. Yeah. But God picked the day I was born. So I'm not going to second guess God.
True.
That's the day I was supposed to have been born.
Right.
You know.
Right.
Jane, we're flat out of time. Thank you for your time.
It's
thanks for all you do.
Here. Thank you.
Thanks for listening, everyone. God bless. We'll talk with you again soon. We'd like to thank all the wonderful people and organizations, businesses in town and throughout the Diocese of Sacramento who have provided underwriting for the Bishop's Hour, some in the last few years, some have been with us for a very long time. If you would like to be an underwriter for the Bishop's Radio Hour, it's a wonderful opportunity to support this mission and also to support the diocese and also to get some recognition for your organization or for your business. The easiest way to do this is to give us a shout, send us an email, radio@scd.org, and we can give you all the details about helping to underwrite the Bishop's Radio Hour. Again, that's radio@scd.org. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
Well, here I am in a river of questions. Can I pour my heart out to a listening ear? Well, I see this life, it's valleys and mountains, and I think of all the roads that brought me here. Oh, that brought me here. Walking down the road. Well, I've questioned my reasons, this life I'm living. I question my ability to judge. judge wrong from right. Well, I questioned all the things I've ever called certain. My race, my religion, my country, my mind. But the one thing I don't question is you. You really love me like you say you do. You really love me like you say you do. So hold me, I need you to hold me. Well, I've questioned significance, meaning and relevance. Does the work I'm doing really matter at all? Well, I question my faith.